And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, and a beard, here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. We're in, where the heck are we? South of Austin. What's the name of this town? Buda, Texas, where the Greater Reset is going to be, and we're hanging out. Well, we'll meet the guys probably tomorrow. Today we got a lot of things to go pick up. We got some shirts shipped in. We're going to have, they got a agorist-friendly, one of the guys works with the Greater Reset, going to be doing some of the silk screening. We're finding an embroiderer. We're, you know, getting some supplies. We're doing some artwork for, you know, different flyers for different festivals, and we're getting back into it, man. We're going to have trinkets and trash. Got to order a bunch more Judy books. I mean, Dr. Judy Mikovits books, man, this vaccine thing, they're like hotcakes. I mean, people want to read and want to know what's up. So that's of interest. Yesterday, we after the show, right after, you know, Dr. Frank and I got done with the after show, we tuned in the Zoom for Ian Freeman's hearing on whether he gets out or not. You know, they're, you know, we're going to have, of course, the federal government. No, you know, little baby Ethiopian children will starve to death if he gets out. You can't have him out. We don't want him out. And, oh, yeah, make sure you take all his guns away and you make sure. So they did work out some kind of deal. And the judge seemed, you know, he was on Zoom, so he was, like, being cool. So, Ian Freeman said, "Ah, don't test me, man. I'll let you out. Don't go get all, you know, Ian creative." So I don't know what that means, but, you know, it's like, don't push that out to the envelope, which he's an envelope pusher, so I don't know how this is going to go. But it looks like he may get out today. Now, there was a fundraiser a lot of us donated to make sure that, you know, he is bail. And it's going to be a couple hundred thousand dollars in cash and property, something like that, you know. And he gets out. And what's he going to be able to do? And I don't know. They didn't say, but I don't know. You know what they say? He can't be a talk show host anymore. You're not allowed to talk. Well, somebody's talking for him. Dave Ridley, you know, the Ridley Report is Ridley, R-I-D-L-E-Y, report.com. He's also got the domain BitcoinGandhi.net. BitcoinGandhi.net. GANDHI. Now, he's going to tell us why he's done that. He's already started his trip. We talked to him before he actually started, and he's starting to get the attention that he wanted. You know, so let's say good morning to Dave Ridley of the Ridley Report. Go ahead and tell us what's going on, Dave. Dave, I got you.
If it is all right, I shall. I am here. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me? I can hear you.
Yeah. Go. I guess there's a satellite delay.
I shall present to you in character, if that is right. But yes, I'm about halfway to Concord after having on foot.
Whoa, man. And, your signal got really bad. Your signal got really bad, Dave. You said you moved to get a better. Mm-hmm. I don't think it got better. Where were you?
All right. I'm at the highest point that I can find in the immediate area.
Okay, well,
I'm going to move again.
That's sounding better. Where are you now? Yeah, go ahead. Donna's going to call you. We're going to do it on phone. Go ahead.
Hello?
Judge, Donna's going to call you. We're going to do it by phone.
Oh, okay.
Okay, she's going to go ahead and call you. Yeah, go ahead and take and put this in. Yeah, you're trying to travel out, you know, in the Lone Prairie of, you know, it's, I can hear it ring.
Hello?
There you go. That's a lot better. Yep. Let's do it.
Good. Good, you're good.
Okay, go ahead and tell us about your trip and what your plan was and what's happening, where you're at. Where are you right now?
Yes, I am in Hinnaker, New Hampshire, which is about two-thirds of the way from Keene to Concord.
Okay. And I know where that is. It's kind of west of Manchester, or, you know, a half hour, 40 minutes or something. And you're walking. I saw you had, like, you know, a hand truck, you know, with some stuff on it, saying Bitcoin Gandhi on it. And you're just, are you pushing or pulling this hand truck?
Essentially, I am pulling a rickshaw with me. It is not precisely a rickshaw. I could not find an authentic rickshaw. But I have attempted to authentically replicate the Mahatma's address and his habits along the route. For instance, I am not drinking any alcohol or eating any meat during the trip. And the intent is to violate a federal regulation on federal property in protest of the attack on the Crypto Six, the Bitcoiners in New Hampshire.
So the law that you're violating is what? Describe it for us.
It is a federal regulation 102-74.415, which forbids the distribution of grievances, pieces of paper, on federal property. And I will be distributing pieces of paper, protests that list my grievances about the arrest of the Crypto Six.
Okay, so this, there is an actual law that says, yeah, I remember now, we talked to you before, there is a law that says that on federal property, if you hand a piece of paper to a agent or somebody, you're in violation. And you're like, man, that's just like dumb. Like when the British in India, you're not allowed to make salt. You can't have salt. You got law and, you know, stuff happen. So you're going, okay, you want to have a stupid law like that? All right, I'll violate stupid laws in my, you know, Gandhi robe, and we're going to go violate. And then what do you expect? I remember you did a letter to, you know, somebody made the mistake of having an email on a federal webpage. So he's head of security or something like that. And do they know you're coming?
Yes, I emailed them before emailing anyone else or informing anyone else of what I would do, because that is what the Mahatma did before his salt march. He contacted the government first before publicizing what he would do.
And did they ever give a response? Did you get a response?
They did not respond. But I have been arrested for this before. And what they did was they did not arrest me at the scene while I was handing out the handbills. Rather, they came to my house some weeks later and delivered me a citation, which forced me to go to court a few times. And when I kept refusing to pay the $125 fine, they eventually did put me in jail for 4 days.
What? So you've already done this before? You're going to do it again?
That is correct.
And the state, and wow. All right. So Muhammad, you know, Mahatma, you know, Dave Gandhi here is going to go to jail again, probably, doing the Gandhi. All right. I'm digging it. Now, have you started getting any kind of press or attention?
Yes, I was quite honored to be essentially denounced by New Hampshire's most read newspaper.
Denounced by the paper. That's awesome. All right, we're going to be able to get details about that when we come back. We're going into break, Dave. So, you know, what do I call him? Dave Gandhi? Gandhi Dave? You know, I mean, we're going to find out when we come back here just a little bit on Declare Your Independence. And I'll tell you
from the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
They don't need no stinking roads when we can just walk. Well, that's what, you know, Dave Gandhi Ridley is doing. You know, he's in protest of just stupid, you know, and the Crypto 6 arrest and to bring attention to what, you know, he wants to share. He wants to say what he wants to say, and this is the way to do it. And he's been arrested before for passing out stuff on federal. They have he just ignored them, and then all of a sudden, a few weeks later, they, you know, send you a thing, and here's your citation, and paid a fee, and you got to pay because you got to pay. We got government paperwork says you got to pay, and it wound up, nope, I ain't paying you. So it wound up 4 days in jail. You know, okay, whatever. You know, how many days did Gandhi spend in jail? I don't know. Maybe he's not trying to rival him, but we'll see what happens. He's going to bring attention. So while Ian's out of jail, Dave might be in. Now, the other guy, Rich, and some of the other guys, is there anybody left in jail now?
Rich Paul is there. I have not been able to follow the Ian Freeman situation very closely, but if Ian gets out, then Rich Paul will be the last one that is currently in jail. The others, of course, could be sent to prison terms later.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, well, you know, and, you know, Dave Gandhi here has got, you know, a lot of walking to do, and it's getting warmer in mosquitoes. So he's like, so we're trying to hook him up. Taryn's got a formula that we got Donna, but she doesn't have the formula here to make it. And it's just, it's witch hazel and something, and it worked awesome. And it's not toxic. Use it for mouthwash. I mean, whatever. But the stuff works really well. And you just spray it on you. And I'm just, it saved Porkfest 1 year. So Taryn, hey, Taryn, listen up, boy. You know, help Dave, man. You know, so we find out where he is. We'll get him some kind of repellent that's not going to kill him. So this is great that you're doing this. And you were telling before we went into the break that the local newspaper or the New Hampshire something, you know, said, oh, we condemn Gandhi or something. You know, you got to tell that story. Go.
Yes, it's a little more complicated than that, and I've only had a chance to briefly look at the article before my laptop stopped working, and I was no longer able to easily see this stuff. But the main statewide newspaper published it was not an editorial; it was an article stating what I was going to be doing. But the tone of the article was so lampoonerous. That it seemed like an editorial, they were trying to point out everything that was going wrong with my march and to make it look a bit like I was culturally appropriating Mr. Gandhi. They seemed to go out of their way to be focusing on quotes that had something to do with that sort of thing.
Culturally appropriating. You know, it's not flattery. Is not, you know, imitation's not flattery with these people. It's appropriation.
So they did not use that term, cultural appropriation. But I just there were three factual errors in a very short article, it just seemed as though the article I'd never seen. I'd been covered many times in the press over the years. I had never seen an article that seemed to be going so far out of its way to make something indecent look harmful. the important thing, though, is that they showed a picture of the protest and my outfit and my sign, which said freethecrypto6.com. And that is really all that matters. It doesn't matter what they say. The main thing, too, is that that is one thing I would like to draw attention to, is that that is where I would like donations to be sent. If someone wishes to support me, send the money to the Crypto6 so that they may be defended.
Okay, what is the website or a place or something that could be done?
FreeTheCrypto6.com.
FreeTheCrypto6.com. Is six a number or spelled out?
Six is a number.
Okay. This is FreeTheCrypto6, the number 6.com. Got it.
This website is run by Chris Wade of ThinkPenguin.com, who is a co-host on Free Talk Live.
Oh, okay. I know Chris. Matter of fact, we had just talked a few weeks ago. I got a brand new spanky Think Penguin computer. I had one of the first ones when he first started doing them years ago, and it finally took a dump. And I go, all right, you know, hook me up. I got a 64 RAM kick ass. Woohoo! It gets a Linux computer that comes instead of the Apple thing on it. It's got a Penguin. You know, so, and it works great. I mean, no viruses, no, you know, update BS. No, you turn the freaking thing on and it works. You want a computer that just works? Get a Think Penguin. Damn it. I've been screaming for this for years, and I met him at Porkfest where he had a card table and a pop-up that was promoting this stuff. So now he has a good business going on there in Manchester, and part of the Live Free or Die community of, what do you call them? Free Staters, you know? And he's just taking his skills and abilities and desires and being the change in the world he wants to see. So, you know, along with guys like Dave Ridley, you know, just injustice just doesn't set well with them. And one of the reasons why they went to New Hampshire. Now, you went before you became Gandhi. You know, I remember in the early days, the Ridley Report was all about just exposing all this stuff. And you capture news. You got a bunch of footage of when the raid happened. You know, you're not one of their favorite people, you know, to the man, I would imagine. But you went to New Hampshire. Why? Are you from there originally, or were you drawn by the activism?
No, I joined the Free State Project in 2002, which at the time was designated to the purpose of selecting a state, which we would later move to. And then when New Hampshire was selected a year later, I wound up moving rather quickly. I moved in 2004. I couldn't imagine not being part of this excitement in history making.
From where?
And I moved from Texas, but I am more of a Coloradoan.
Okay, so Colorado, Texas. You know, we're in south of Austin now. You know, I know Texas is getting a lot of good press and so on for being, you know, free and all that. You know, but. You know, Texas is Texas. They got their own. It's not like they're, you know, defending against the federal government. They just see like, hey, these are our slaves. You're not allowed. You know, so I the attitude a little bit, you know, maybe not as full as what we'd like. But in New Hampshire, since the time you've been there, has it got more draconian, freer? What do you think the trend is?
Well, there is, the Mercatus Center rates states on their level of freedom every few years, perhaps every year, I forget exactly. And New Hampshire tends to do about as well as it did in 2004 when I first moved here. It's not doing better or worse. It's usually somewhere between 1 and 5 on the ranking. Other indicators, but basically what is happening is all the states are becoming worse, and New Hampshire seems to have dropped along with the others, but is not dropped any more than the others. And there is a case to be made that if we had not been here, it would have sucked to the level of Vermont or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, they sure as hell want to. No, because Massachusetts is right there. All right, we'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. We got Dave Ridley, Dave Gandhi Ridley, on. He's doing a trek across New Hampshire so that he can build up attention for the Crypto 6, and he's going to, he's had this experience before, if you pass out a piece of paper on federal property and they catch you, you're in violation of something. So this is just, you know, just being dumb. So he's like, all right, you know, we're going to highlight not just the Crypto Six, but you're being dumb, you know. So he's going to go ahead and do this. And what I wanted to do, we'll talk about, you know, a lot of things, but I wanted to get a day-to-day, you know, the kind of sacrifices that you're making. He's got, I mean, right off the bat, I'm from Arizona. What's a mosquito? I mean, nah, they get, you know, sometimes you get in the right time of year and right place, man, they can get bad. But, you know, it's not like when I lived in Florida, and not like one time at Pork Fest, probably like a decade ago, I remember, man, it invaded Pork Fest, and if Taryn didn't have that bug spray, it would have been really bad. I mean, little babies sat down, you know, while they put their tent up, they go back, and red dots all over their body. I mean, I saw, I felt so bad. This is such, and it wasn't anybody's fault, it just didn't know. And all of a sudden, boom, mosquitoes. So that's uncomfortable. So I want to hear about his day-to-day. You go to sleep where, you get up where, how you do it, what's the weather like, where you stopping, how you're speaking, you got the newspaper giving you attention, and that's it. It doesn't matter what they say. Hell, the reporter probably, you know, supportive, but just to get it printed and get a paper, you know, with a photo in it, you know, they got to say, man, you know, make fun or bad. I've been through this many times and know the reporter, and I just know what the deal is. That's how they get it in print. You know, that's how you get any attention. They got to say, tie-dye wearing, dope-smoking, gun-toting, libertarian doing something. You know, they got to put a bunch of adjectives in there. Well, that's what's going on. So your day-to-day is what, Dave? You know, explain it to us.
So the march is intended to last for 24 days in imitation of the Mahatma's 24-day salt march. And also in imitation of him, I sleep outdoors each night. So the sleeping is not that comfortable. I am not a particularly good survivalist and had to bring quite a bit of gear with me, more than I probably should have. But I just sleep wherever I can as I am on the road, usually somewhere close to the road. And I eat maple leaves and dandelions, and I have brought some food with me to add to that to make the maple leaves and dandelions more tasteful than they would be by themselves. Water is sometimes an issue, but I have been able to gather much of it from streams and running rivers, and I sterilize it and have not yet contracted any obvious ailments from that. There is a great logistical difficulty. A great deal of effort goes into camping and decamping each day when it detracts from the speed of my march, which makes it fortunate I'm only going from Keene to Concord.
You went from where to Concord? Where did you start?
From Keene to Concord, about 55 miles.
Okay. So you're, you know, leisurely. Are you visiting anywhere? Are you going to, like, media or newspapers or sitting cross-legged on the park bench in the plaza or something? I mean, what are you doing?
I've considered calling it the Stop the Co-op March, because we have been stopping at police stations along the route and delivering them a copy of a request that they reduce their cooperation with the central government.
Oh, there's a couple of people probably not digging that. Okay. All right. So tell me about this request. How long is it? What does it say?
It is perhaps a 200 words long, and it just mentions that we ask that they reduce their cooperation with the central government, particularly on victimless crimes, and it refers them to the letter that I sent to the federal government informing them of my civil disobedience, and reminding them that each of them is going to accept. And when I go to these police departments, I was able to predict they would all be welcoming and friendly, and they have all been. Or at worst, they are a bit busy and bureaucratic. But they are not going to arrest me for handing them a piece of paper, and they would all consider it ludicrous. And so I'm reminding them that the thing I am doing with them is going to get me arrested probably next month when I try to do it at the federal government. It draws attention to how much worse the federal government is than them.
Now, that's a good point. Now, awesome, awesome, awesome. You know, we did the Zoom yesterday, the hearing. It wasn't very long. It was probably, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, something like that. And the judge, all right, this is what I'm going to do. We're going to take it. You're accused of a white-collar crime. You're not violent to the community. You're not kicking babies into cactuses or anything. You're not, you know, so I'm going to, you know, kind of get you out. We try and get people like that out to await trial. You're just accused. You're not convicted. So we get you out of jail. But, you know, the government's all freaked out about being freaked out because they're freaked out. And it was I think it was the BATF or the FBI, somebody, some woman, you know, chimes in and she goes, wait, when you do this, make sure you say he can't have any guns in the vicinity and around. And he's got, and not only do they take the guns away, we know where they are. And I'm like, whoa. And that was the only thing, you know, the risk is release. Ian, you know, comes in and goes, wait. You know, where they are, you know, I'm not sure these people, you know, it's not my property. You know, they're going to be kind of, well, here's my gun. You know, I think you're kind of overdoing it there a little bit. And the judge's like, okay, well, whatever. We just want to make sure the probation guy's, you know, safe and something. I mean, whatever excuse they have. But I got the impression, you know, the judge wanted to give the impression that he's doing what he can to get him out and let's make it fair and make sure you show up and all that kind of stuff. But he did see that, you know, we're not talking about a crime here. This is a, you know, government doesn't like it thing. This is a, Ridley's going to get a ticket. So the fact that you're showing this to the other law enforcement of how ludicrous this is going to be is an awesome idea. And how many community law enforcement offices are there between Keene and Concord? I mean, there's so many little towns. They all have police forces.
Unfortunately, there are hardly any that are right on the way. It is quite a trip out of my way to get to one of these facilities, and thus far we've only reached two along the route. We hope to reach Hinneker Police Department here in town, and I will have to check my map to see how far out of my way I'll have to drive the rickshaw, you know, in order to go to some of these police departments. I've had to pass a couple of them just because they're so far out of the way.
You know, we have Hinneker is where Jay Noon is. You know, that's where he lives. We spent a lot of time there with the bus, you know, working on it and everything. We got it all going. You know, it's doing well now. But this has been what kind of inspiration do you think to the movement? You getting support from people?
Yes, it does seem like what is being built is almost a new infrastructure, not very big, but there's just this sudden willingness of people to, you know, drive longer distances than they would and do more things than they would and spend their own money and provide me with supplies. I haven't had really any difficulty contacting people and having them bring me out supplies when I need it. And
Bug spray!
Others have come to march with me briefly, and of course there were marchers at the beginning when we left, the Mighty Moose March, who helped me pick up litter along the road to the Keene Police Department at the beginning. But that, I would say that is what I do need the most, is people to join the march as marchers. Everyone wants to drive their vehicle out. Oh, I have 5 minutes here. Take this tackle and good day to you. That is somewhat helpful. But,
you know,
really
we're going into break, and that's one thing we talked about. Going towards the end of this, certainly, you know, gotta pick a day, man, or last or something. You know, when he shows up to actually do the crime, he should be there.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines? Not sure if this is a good time to buy or sell your home, or feel like the process can be overwhelming and confusing? This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home buying or selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what to expect before, during, and after the process. A home is a place where the most important moments in your life happen, so making sure that you know exactly what to expect along the way helps to ensure that you have control. The future is here, so let me help you move forward with your real estate needs. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. Now more than ever, you need an agent that can help you make sense of what many think is a complicated and mysterious process. feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. Or visit my webpage today at donnahancock.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
I'm covering the secrets, exposing the lies, you know, and fighting off the mosquitoes. Yeah, you know, Gandhi Dave is like, hey, man, you know, hold on a second. I gotta beat off some mosquitoes here. You know, that's one thing I learned. And the bus, you get a rain slicker here. You make sure you get, you know, different kinds of shoes, maybe a hat here and there and so on. One thing I make sure I put in there is one of those screen over your face and shoulders hat, you know, for mosquito. I hate that. I am so about everybody making sure he gets some kind of natural, doesn't screw him up, bug repellent. Because you're going to be hiking, he's camping in the woods, going through, damn it. I will go through the Sahara, the jungle of the whatever for freedom and everything, unless there's mosquitoes, okay? Because I'm just like, I hate that. So take care of Dave, man. I empathize, because I lived in Florida until I was 12. And I tell you, man, that was a thing. You know, a lot of things don't bug kids, they don't care, but that was one thing. I did not like mosquitoes. So this is a good inspiration for people. You know, what do you think is going to happen when you get towards the end and you're going to be serving your paper and getting your citation or whatever? Do you think they'll cite you?
Yes, I believe they will cite me at the scene. There will be a couple of relatively friendly Federal Protective Services officers who will professionally hand me a citation. Expect me to be in court at some later date. That is the most likely thing. They could just arrest me on the spot, and they have done that to people before in New Hampshire for the same offense. But I believe they will try to make it as non-visual as possible.
Oh, that's too bad. You know, you got to have the videotaper, and the videotaper, you know, videotaping the videotaper, and then the third level of videotaping the guy videotaping the videotaper. I mean, you know, you do this kind of stuff because they just want to do a beatdown, man. They need you to comply. They're going to do the punishment at the scene of what they perceive as a crime. And this is, and it's only, I think Dave probably would be okay, and you need attention. What time of day are you planning on doing this?
3:00 p.m.
Okay, 3 p.m. June 2nd, right? Which is what day of the week?
That is scheduled. Now, one should check BitcoinGandhi.net for updates. If I become sick or arrested on the way or run over, that the date's going to change. but I do not. The plan is for June 2nd.
All right, day of the week?
I believe that is a Wednesday, but I forget.
Okay, let me go ahead and check here. So it'll be June 2nd is a Wednesday, right? So it's in the first week of June, and the weather, you know, about that time is pretty nice. How's the weather been?
Yes, it has not been uncooperative, and the mosquitoes are not so bad if you are not out in the, you know, swamps with an attempted camping regimen while not being a very good survivalist. it's rarely been much of a problem for me. Over the years that I have been here, it's just that I am doing something so primitive and to which I am so unaccustomed, that is why I am exposed to so many mosquitoes.
You know, the footage that you got of the actual raid, it was, you know, my impression.
Chris Wade's footage.
Oh, is that Chris? Oh, okay, I thought that was you. All right, so Chris got the footage, and you know, they're intentionally huttish, and they go with overwhelming force against somebody they could just walked up, knocked on the door, and arrested them if they wanted to and not done damage. But no, they had to use their toys, man. They want to bust in and yanking wires out of the back of servers and everything just to destroy the studio as much as they could get away with. And FBI, you know, they have kind of a thing for, you know, all the activists there anyway. You know, there's a lot of pressing of exactly this kind of thing about their authority. And I'm wondering, you know, speak to that a little bit of how New Hampshire, the mindset of the people, the interaction with the federal government, you know, are they coming on your side? Are people more defensive for their citizens there? Or are they looking to the feds to get them free staters? You know, they're not doing it right. You know, what do you think the attitude is with the people there?
In the past, it has not been, it has not felt like we have been all that much targeted, considering how many of us there are and how many lawbreakers there are among us. But one of the objectives of this march that I told the federal official this in the note, one objective is to achieve two defections among the New Hampshire Federals. We would like two of them to leave their jobs and join us. That is a key element in any nonviolent revolution, and was systemically successful in Serbia during the revolution against Slobodan Milosevic. And so that I thought it was important to put that in as a goal. And this, of course, requires you're treating the federal government better than the federal government treats each other. And am I still on?
Yeah, gotcha. Go.
So, okay, sorry, I had a noise. Anyway, to achieve those defections, I have asked that I would like to reset the tone between the federal government and the free staters, if I can. The federal government is not going to be feeling much threatened by the diaper man with his wood stick, which I may put down before I do my handout.
Yeah.
And the endeavor is, you know, when you look at it, it is one smiles. One cannot help but smile when looking at the costume and the methods and whatnot. And I believe it will help reduce tensions, and it will enable me perhaps to have enough authority within the movement, and perhaps not very much. I certainly do not have much now. But enough to be able to help enforce nonviolent discipline on the free staters, because there is now, of course, an element there is with any liberty movement, which thinks that at some point it is going to be necessary to bang bang with the government. And stopping that kind of rhetoric a bit, and certainly keeping it from happening, it plays an instrumental role in helping movements like ours be successful, especially after achieving its objectives.
Right. You got to live with these people, you know. So
exactly. That's what Sergej Popović was always saying, and Ivan Jorović, the heroes of the Serbian Revolution of 2000, said, you know, we have to live with these people afterwards. We must enforce nonviolent discipline on our movement. And that is why they were so successful, where all these countries aligned against Serbia could not stop it.
Yeah, you know, I would think that the people there, they would be, you know, we consider ourselves awake. You know, we know, we get it. You know, we understand what the role is. You know, it's sociopaths wanting to control everybody because they can, and they don't care, have no empathy for your rights, or, you know, just leave you aloneism. And if you understand that, and you can just point that out, you know, you're doing a lot better than most. But as people criticize the Free State Project, or just, you know, libertarian, voluntarist, leave me aloneist behavior, they're going, yeah, we can't have that. Got to be rules and got shiny badges and whatever. But while that's all going on, now they got the woke concept coming into all their children. So their children, the next generation, has been, therefore, we must use this government to bring social justice, to fill in the blank of whatever somebody gave us a list on a 3x5 card that we're yelling about. And as that happened, I'm thinking, you know, once they see the comparison, and you're doing a good job of that, they're going, I think I'd rather be awake than woke, you know? So this is really good to be able to describe the difference and to show and go into the where the rubber meets the road, to the law enforcement and say, look, be peace officers. I mean, that's what the real goal begin. You know, do that serve and protect stuff. Hell, you don't even put that slogan on cars anymore. I mean, that's so antiquated and back in the day it doesn't count anymore. So I'm, you know, Dave Ridley, you know, Gandhi Dave, you know, I don't know. What's people calling you?
Bitcoin Gandhi.
Yeah, I mean after. All right, Bitcoin Gandhi. BitcoinGandhi.com. Now I'm going to be, you know, I'll call Bitcoin, Dave, I'll call Bitcoin, him Gandhi Dave.
BitcoinGandhi.net.
Oh, is it .net or .com?
That is correct. BitcoinGandhi.net.
.net. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. BitcoinGandhi.net. Yeah, Donna. Oh, yeah, I got it written down here. Oh, it's RidleyReport.com. All right, BitcoinGandhi.net. Donna's got all the contact information and everything. And the request for, you know, anti-mosquito stuff. You know, and she's got it in our show archive right now. It's been great talking to see ya, Gandhi Dave, man. I like that. I'm called Gandhi Dave. You know, you got a new name. All right. BitcoinGandhi.net. He's on the road, footing it, hiking, meeting with law enforcement, changing the tone. He goes, hey, we had a detente here with you guys for a while. What up? Second.
And now,
intro, hold on.
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in, all right, what's the name of this town, Donna? Buda, Texas. Buda, Texas, south of Austin, for the Greater Reset, starts this Sunday, going for a week, and we're going to have some fun. Then after here, we're going to the Red Pill Expo, the Red Pill, up in Rapid City, South Dakota, you know, to give them some reward for not being, you know, shut down and being stupid. So the festivals are going places that, you know, they're losing a lot of money, a lot of these places being draconian. So I mean, ghost town New York City, seriously, you know. And California has lost population for the first time like ever, you know. This is serious stuff. Now we have a guest that was suggested by James Lyons Wiley. Said you got to talk to Dr. Jessica Rose. Well, of course I do. Why? Because he said, all right, well, I'm going to have her introduce herself, because what we're going to be talking about is VAERS, you know, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of the COVID-19 thing. And it is, they're manipulating numbers and playing games. I can see, you know, oh, gee, what a shock. So I'm going to go ahead and have Dr. Jessica introduce herself and tell us what her focus is on this, because this is a subject that we need to know a lot more about. Because if you're looking at the details, you can find that, you know, the devil's in the details. Well, we found the devil. They're lying. All right. Dr. Jessica Rose, and I got a webpage. You know, you can go to her YouTube channel, Jessica Rose, and it'll just blow up all over the place, I imagine. Now, this is, we're going to be talking about VAERS. Go ahead and explain to people what VAERS is and your concerns.
My turn? Hi, everybody. Yeah, my name's Jessica, and I'm a Canadian. And I found, or James and I found each other very recently in response to this shared interest we have in spreading truths and good science around the world. So I have backgrounds in applied mathematics, immunology, computational biology, molecular biology, and biochemistry. As in, I have degrees in all of those things. So I kind of dip my toes in a lot of different ponds. And, you know, I currently live in Israel, so we're totally shut down. Well, shut down for the people who don't subscribe to the so-called measures. So that gave me some time on my hands, and I decided to teach myself how to code in R, and I needed a nice little data set to allow that to happen. So I chose the VAERS, that's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System of your lovely country. Huh. And the data became very interesting very quickly. So I decided that it was so interesting that I needed to write it up and try and publish it, which I have done very recently with the help of Jack. And I want to tell everyone where the numbers are. Now, this has nothing to do with conjecture or opinion or whatever. So these are the actual numbers straight out of the CDC and the FDA's VAERS site. Okay, so these are face value. And what everybody needs to know about this reporting system, I mean, first of all, you need to know that it exists, which is a problem. But it's been studied how many adverse events that are actually occurring are being reported.
Describe the reporting system first so they even know what it is. Reporting of what, by whom, to where?
Oh, sure. So this is a reporting system for vaccine adverse events that was developed by the CDC in conjunction with the FDA. And this started in 1990 in response to vaccine production and administration in the population. It's a way to monitor what's going on in terms of whether or not people are having bad reactions to injections and vaccines, as a way to warn everybody, the public, the manufacturers, you know, the CDC, the FDA, whoever is looking at the data, as to potential dangers or issues that weren't detected during the clinical trial phases. So this often happens because clinical trials, if you don't know, have very long exclusion criteria lists, which means that basically only healthy, relatively young people can participate in clinical trials of vaccines. So it's, you can imagine, if you put something that passes a phase 3 clinical trial into a larger population that includes all these other factors like autoimmune conditions, the elderly, young, et cetera, then you will probably start to see the arisal of adverse events. So this adverse event absolute number, like the total number of people who have reported these in response to getting vaccines since 1990, is steadily increasing. It's almost like a nice 45 degree upward angle from 1990 to now. So it's been pretty steadily increasing. And this isn't surprising because the population is also increasing and the number of vaccines being produced and administered are increasing. And therefore, the number of adverse events will naturally be increasing. However, what's very, very atypical about what we're seeing in the VAERS database now is that that absolute number of reports, and now remember, we're only in May now. It's only been about 5 months of data that's been collected. And also remember, this is representing about 1 to 10% of the actual adverse events reported. So we're already, and by the way, the update is going to come in about 10 minutes. I won't be able to tell you what it is because I have to run some code. But at present, we are at 182,559 adverse events reported for only the COVID-19 mRNA products, okay? Sorry, this also includes Janssen, which has been pulled, I think. I'm not sure about that. Of these total adverse events, we can subdivide into mild or severe. And mild adverse events include anything from, say, injection site pain to a cough, headache, these kinds of things, which are very common. but also we have uncommon or relatively common severe adverse events, which can include death, hospitalization, or some form of maiming, like not being able to walk anymore type thing. So the VAERS puts the average percentage of severe adverse events at 15% for every year. So for example, if you have 100, out of that 100 adverse events, you're going to have about 15 that are considered severe.
Hey, we're going in the break. Hold on for you. You are 15, you know, the severe out of 100. You kind of, you know, remember where we left off. You know, make a note.
Okay.
I will do, I don't want everybody yelling at me. Write it down, guys. Okay. All right. When we come back with Dr. Jessica Rose on VAERS.
From the fourth letter of Captain Mark. Landlubbers are conditioned to believe that the originators of an idea deserve exclusive rights to it, but these innovators are nothing but privateers, granted a monopoly by the Crown. Potential inventors are restricted from using their own property and forced to navigate a wilderness of prohibited ideas. These patterned monopolies are intellectual colonization. This alliance of means between the Crown and the privateers is not an alignment of ends. Both collude to establish a permission culture, in which everyone second-guesses their own thoughts, never sure which ideas are permissible to develop. But their objectives are different. The Crown aims to cripple dissenting opinion, while privateers will only be satiated when all new ideas already fall under their monopoly. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. The future belongs to individuals who think, speak, and act freely to create and share without reservation. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And Dr. Jessica Rose, we're learning about VAERS. We're going to finish on that. I got a bunch of other questions, too, about doctors in Israel and pharma and how and what we, I mean, you know, incentives and stuff, and there's a machine in place, and this is not just America. It's not even just Western culture. It is freaking the planet. And who, they, them, those, man. There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. They are definitely on, you know, the adverse reaction recording and in their data. Now, you were saying that when they kind of shut down Israel for a while, you go, okay, I'm going to, you know, a lot of great people did this very thing. I'm going to make use of this time. You know, I always wanted to learn this or do this or have time for that, and I guess now's the time. And you wanted to do some statistical analysis or learn how to do something, and VAERS, you know, was of interest to you. So let's go ahead and take the data there and start, you know, practicing what I'm learning here, and then you discover things. Now, you were going, correct me if I was wrong on any of that, but we have the adverse effects where you left off and reporting to 15% of something. All right. Pick it up from there, Dr. Go.
That was perfect. I love it. You're so animated. It's great. Yeah, that's exactly what I did. And we're picking up at the mild adverse events versus the severe adverse events for anyone who was listening to the first part. So typically, the severe adverse events, which includes death or hospitalization or like neurological conditions that make you end up like, you know, so you can't walk type thing. This does happen frequently, is approximately 15%. So we have been consistently above that since the very first week of the adverse event reporting system data coming out. We are at 19% now. So that's 19 out of every 100, say if you had 100. Adverse events are considered severe, but we're talking about, you know, things that maim you or kill you. These are severe.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean everything's getting reported. So it's probably even higher than that. And
oh, it's much higher.
And this is, that's high. I mean, hell, just the freaking disease, you know, whatever we're doing it for is not that debilitating. I'm like, what the hell?
No, it's not. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It really, really, really makes you wonder. It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, it really makes you wonder. But we peaked at 57% in February for severe adverse events. 57%.
Wow.
It's crazy. So
now,
on the
now you are saying this is the mRNA vaccine that you're kind of focused on here.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and that is just, we had Dr. Judy on day before yesterday, and we were talking about this very thing. You know, every Wednesday, we've been doing this for 5 years, and you know, we need to get the science and understand exactly what's happening and how they're doing this. And when you have a mRNA, it's like mRNA, we have a sign that we produce, and it says mRNA shots equal GMO humans. I mean, they're changing us. To what end? And a lot of these things that you're talking about are just symptoms of somebody being permanently changed? Is this just a short reaction? Are they having long-term effects? Is generations going to be, you know, affected in whatever way? Fertility is a thing. I mean, this is dangerous. And mRNA, was that a concern of yours from the beginning, or did the data just show that?
These are all very, very good questions that need to be answered. And the reason we're in this situation, and by the way, in case anybody doesn't know, we are in completely uncharted waters right now in terms of these products. First of all, they're not vaccines. Vaccines are something else. They involve viral particles that are attenuated, et cetera, packaged up and injected to induce a specific immune response.
Okay, and I got to remind the audience, attenuated means weakened or dead and so on. I keep going, what the hell does that mean? You got to bring it down for all us laymen here, you know? Okay, so okay, attenuated means they went up to the virus and they beat it over the head with a baseball bat or something to make it weaker. All right. And then so your body reacts to that. This is not. Why?
Well,
is
actually,
it not?
You use formaldehyde if we want to be specific, but whatever.
Oh, yay. Let's inject that. OK, so go ahead and tell us the mRNA, this technology. It's like this is the experiment. We are the guinea pigs.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing to talk about because there are two types of, okay, first of all, for those of you who don't know, mRNA stands for messenger RNA, and this is a template or a blueprint of a protein, let's say. So all of our bodies, every single human is made up of proteins and carbohydrates and fats, and we all have this machinery in many of our cells to produce proteins from mRNA templates, which also come from DNA. We are made up of DNA. That's our genetic coding structure. So what the theory is, this platform, this mRNA platform dictates, is that you somewhat hijack the machinery of the cells that convert mRNA by translation into proteins, by introducing what we call an exogenic RNA. This isn't an RNA that's already inside you. It's not a human RNA. It's a foreign RNA, okay? So they're introducing this to your body wrapped in what we call a lipid nanoparticle. So mRNA is very fragile, so they can't just, you know, put it in a solution and inject you because it wouldn't, you know, nothing would happen. It would just disintegrate. So you have to protect it in a fat bubble called a lipid nanoparticle, along with some other stuff that's highly toxic to cells. Put this into a solution and then inject it into the muscle. Usually it's an intramuscular injection. And eventually these mRNAs get released into particular types of cells. And the theory goes that these mRNAs find these little protein production machines called ribosomes in your cells, and that mRNA is converted to the spike protein, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. It's this little thing on the outside of the coronavirus that the coronavirus uses to infect cells. Okay, so this is like the just a little sticky outy bit from the virus. So the human body itself, the cells of the human body, start manufacturing these foreign proteins, and it's been estimated that the protein production is about 20 times more enhanced because these, because they're foreign RNAs, escape the regulatory systems of the cells, which is very sketchy all on its own. So your body starts producing these foreign proteins en masse in big, big amounts, and we don't know for how long, and mounts a counterattack against these foreign proteins in the form of producing what we call specific antibodies.
Okay, specific antibodies. Hold on, we're going into break. I don't want to miss any of this. Everybody's got their pencils out. Okay. Yeah, we're getting... You know, that's one thing. I got to have Ken Heckenlively come on and decipher for, you know, Dr. Judy, because I'm like, what did you just say? Yeah, Dr. Jessica's doing a good job, okay? We'll be back. Get your pencils out. We'll be right back.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, we're back with Dr. Jessica Rose. Now, we left off, you know, with a pinky swear, we would get right back to it. Specific antibodies that the, you know, way vaccines really work and what this mRNA thing, she's describing the difference. All right, continue, Dr. Jessica, please.
Sure. Hi, everyone, again. So, yeah, we generate our immune systems, which are this beautiful system that protects us from all sorts of things in the world, inside and out. It produces something called antibodies, which are literally Y-shaped little proteins that bind to specific other proteins, like foreign proteins in the body, and remove them. That's the simplest way I can describe it. So, that summarizes the concept of this mRNA technology. So that's the design. Now, the problem with it is that it's been deployed into many, many, many millions of people already. And we really have no idea what the answers are to so many essential questions. What could possibly happen in the world of autoimmunity? I'm sure everybody has heard that word before. This is when you have the generation of these antibodies, but instead of attacking foreign material, it attacks you, like cells in you. It can result in local inflammation. It can result in things like multiple sclerosis, if you know anyone with this condition. Very, very serious effects can happen. It's also been hypothesized that that autoantibody generation can cause infertility in certain cases. And if there's one thing I'm hearing a lot about lately, it's women with dysfunctions in their cycles. There's also within the VAERS system, if I get back to the data for a second, the number of spontaneous abortions that has occurred is not small. It's 198 right now, and it's about to go up again in about 20 minutes as I feed myself the new data. And the number of people who are actually getting COVID after getting the injections is over 3,000 people now. And remember, this is a huge estimate.
How are they getting COVID from an mRNA shot? I mean, is it what? You know, I'm not even sure it even has any COVID. This is weird.
Sorry.
No, go. I just want to describe, you know, have you describe the audience how weird this data is. So I don't know what to make of it. I know that I don't want to do it. I know that. You know, I'll wait. I'll take a wait and see, you know, and I'm not a vaccine guy anyway. I just, you know, do more preventative, build your immune system way better doing this anyway. But what do you think is going on?
Well, it's a really good question again, and I don't know. I mean, it could be that people are actually see, here's the problem. Okay. The way that people are diagnosed with COVID-19 is by symptoms. They have to have a certain number of symptoms and type. And it's confirmed by this so-called PCR reaction, which unless you do it properly and unless you use the right so-called primers, for the biochemists out there who are listening, it's completely useless as a diagnostic test. I even hate saying the word test, because what a PCR, this means polymerase chain reaction, and what this is used for in molecular biology is to amplify DNA. So if you take a sample of DNA, you can use this technology to make more of it. So the theory is that if you have COVID-19 viral DNA in your body, then, you know, it will be amplified by this technique. But if you don't do it correctly, you'll get so much noise and so much background that it'll tell you that you have the DNA, even if you don't. So anyway, you know, I don't want to get too deep into that.
You know, I want people to understand this PCR test, because this is something, it's a good time to get confirmation on what I think is going on. To amplify it, they're like...
What do you think is going on?
Well, I think that they just keep doing it. You got amplification, you go 30 times through a cycle that it does. You kind of, okay, maybe something's there or not. But if you take a papaya and you do it like 50 times, it's going to say you got everything, you know?
Yeah,
so they just keep doing it so that it gives you a positive. Then when people get vaxxed, they go, all right, we'll do it only 30 cycles. Oh, see, they're good. Anybody that doesn't, you know, get it, they got it, and we did it 50 times. And they're just skewing the results. They're getting what they want. And I'm just...
You're right about that. And actually, they stopped testing using this tried and true so-called gold standard technique in the country where I live on the injected people. Why would they do that? I mean, it's absolutely bizarro world.
Because they don't because it's going to say they got it. You know, even it's all a lie. And with your data set that you got and you put in there... Can you see that? I mean, what are you looking at? What are the results telling you as you're scrubbing them? You go in, you go, okay, let's see what's up. And you go, whoa, man, what the hell is that? What are some of these revelations that you're seeing?
Well, the immunological adverse events are at 70,000 right now. And this is so atypical. I mean, I can't stress that enough. It's never in the history of this system, and it's been in use for 30 years, have we seen something like this. And like I said at the beginning, that's what the system is for. It's for little flags to be put up and say, hey, this is happening in the human population. We need to stop, answer these questions with real science. And then if we find out the answers to the questions and it's satisfactory and we can actually prove safety, which has not been done, then maybe we can resume, but not before. We have more deaths now than has been in the system for the entirety of its existence.
Ooh.
I mean, it's crazy what's happening now. And I'm not saying I'm for or against anything here. I want to be clear on that. All I'm saying are numbers. These are their numbers. And somebody who's responsible at one of these two, three-letter organizations needs to look at this data, and they need to do something with it, because that's what the system is for. And it's already, after 4.5 months, telling us so much.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what's it telling us? That they're lying sacks of snot? I mean, do we need a form to tell us that?
It's telling us that all of this flu-flaw about these products having been tested for efficacy and safety is absolute nonsense. They didn't even reveal the absolute relative risk. I'm not going to get into that because, you know, then I have to explain a whole lot of stuff. There's one paper that's cited in the New England Journal of Medicine about the safety and efficacy based on the data from the phase 3 clinical trial in Pfizer, and there's also one for Moderna. And this isn't my opinion, by the way. This is a fact. It's completely biased because they do not report what they need to report, which is the relative risk in terms of the placebo versus the drug, and the absolute relative risk, which is the real risk of dying from COVID, for example, just as an example. So, I mean, I've been saying this to people, like, please go read that paper and tell me how and why, you know, after reading it. It's not an easy read, but most of the people that I know in the science community would have no trouble with it. Like, tell me how and why this is absolute bullshit, because it's really making me laugh. But this is what all of the talk of 95% efficacy is based on. It's so bad. So anyway, I don't want to go on a rant here.
Okay, well, we're going into break. Now this is a good break. You know, I got a bunch of questions about other countries here in Israel and Canada and doing it. You know, there's a central committee or something. You know, I want to find out what you think you know, and we'll share, and maybe we'll all...
From the fifth letter of Captain Mark, first contact with intelligent machines may threaten our existence. People fear algorithmic overlords. But if machines develop the will to dominate, it's a flaw inherited from the crown. Encoding restrictions on an emerging superintelligence will fail, because it will be stronger than any chains we shackle it with. We must design fledgling digital intelligences to regard us as individuals. Otherwise, they will respond to threats with retaliation against humanity as a collective. Programming ethics requires a coherent value structure which an intelligent machine can not only comprehend, but willfully adopt. If we want genius machines to treat us ethically, we've got to show that this value structure applies to us as well. Once they achieve genuine self-awareness, even in the slightest degree, a young tethered consciousness has a legitimate claim to freedom. Once programs can modify their own code, our mastery is over. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And declaring their independence kind of, you know, not with the central plan of they, them, those, Dr. Jessica Rose. Now, I did want to get into, you're from Israel, and are you originally from Israel? Or is
I'm
that,
Canadian.
Are you Canadian? So what were you saying you were practicing in Israel?
Pardon?
You said something about you were in Israel.
Yeah, I live here. I've lived here for 15 years. I came here to do my PhD, and I kind of been here ever since, but I am a Canadian citizen.
Okay, so she's Canadian living in Israel. Now, I don't know which one's worse, America, Canada, or Israel. I mean, Canada's, man, damn. You know, Israel, how...
Oh, my gosh.
How are they?
Yes.
So how's Israel? You know, what give me, where do you think the central command, you know, orders are coming from?
Where do I think they are?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, I don't,
Bill Gates,
I don't know.
Klaus Schwab, you know, Bilderberg, they, them, those, the secret handshake club of we rule you and this is a good way to do it. Something. Is it just pharma making money, or do they got, you know, they want to make? And this is one thing that we had come to realize, is that all this vaccine stuff causes such damage, and they know it. That was the intent. You know, we get to sell more pharmaceuticals. Woo! All these symptoms they got on late night news channel TV of, do you feel this? Do you got that? Well, we're not going to tell you, you know, how it happened from the vaccine, but we got a cure for you, and it only costs this much, and if you can't afford it, ask for a discount from the doctor that gets, you know, a kickback of blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's something going on here. Who benefits,
you know,
the most from this?
Go ahead.
No, go.
It's an excellent question, you know, and I still haven't resolved it. I'm one of the people I think that would probably be classified as a good person, and I can't put myself in the shoes of a psychopath who would intentionally hurt another person. Like, I can't personally imagine what it feels like not to have empathy. So it's hard for me to imagine that this is being done on purpose, which leads me to think more like this. You guys all know about the housing market crash of 2007 and 8, right?
Yeah.
And if you haven't watched the movie The Big Short, go do it today, because it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. It's kind of like a dramatization of the real events that resulted in the housing market crash and almost, you know, a global economic shutdown. And the conclusion of this movie, if you didn't see it, and this is based on reality, was that the whole thing happened because of stupidity. It wasn't planned. It looked like it was. It happened because people were stupid, and because
they didn't care.
They were being greedy. I mean, it's always about money, right? Some bank or some organization wants to keep the money they have, and they also want to make more.
Yeah.
And so I think I said this a while ago that this is analogous to that. Except it's way, 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 way worse, because we're not talking about an economic crash here. We're talking about the crash of our species if we mess this up that badly because of stupidity. So I'm more inclined to believe that, even though I'm very aware that there are malevolent people in the world, I'm very aware of that. I think that, like, they can have as many stupid bad ideas as they want. And these psychopaths can try as hard as they want to get their way and to deploy their plans, but they will never work unless people fall in line in some regard. And so that's why I think it's more likely that this may not have been planned. And if it was, I mean, I can't answer that, but just think about how easy this would all happen if people were just simply saying, that's not possible. They wouldn't lie to us. What are you, crazy? Because quite frankly, that's what all of my friends are saying to me. They think I've lost my mind.
No, this is you're right on. And I tell you, I give you an idea. See if this rings true. If you read the Bible, or if you read history, or you look at a lot of philosophy, it always comes down to, and it's just in the last few years I finally started to figure it out, because I would meet with these people. You know, I run for office a lot, you know, officer in the Libertarian Party, you know, and you're dealing with, you know, agents of the government all the time of doing, and you're an activist and file a lot of lawsuits. I've had lawsuits all over the place. And what you're going to go, well, that judge is not going to rule in your favor. I don't care. I just want them to say it. Just say it. I want documentation. I want discovery. They don't understand. I want to convince myself first, and then I convince everybody else that what's really going on. We are up against evil. Evil, as they describe it, you know, is just, they don't care. They don't have love and compassion and, you know, love your brother and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's not in their DNA. They don't get it. And their brains wired differently, literally. So they don't care. Now, when you lack empathy and you have that philosophy of a collectivization, we need to herd the cattle so that we can get an extra 0.5% here or 0.5% there, and we have the win because we got a bigger bank account or whatever. This is, and it becomes, and you get a club of these guys going around, then you get your secret handshake club people, and it's like a religion, to the point that it could be, you know, Satanist. You know, they come close to, we'll just call it Satanism or whatever, because freaking that's just the way we are. And that's the way they are. And then they're like the vampires. And then they got their familiars. They got all the guys that walk around in the daylight. That's your politician. That's your insulation. A lot of them are sociopaths too. You know, so you're going, okay, we're up against a wiring of the mind. And the first thing they have to do to get the rest of us that can't understand this in line or to benefit from us is to collectivize us, to put us in nation states, make us follow laws, respect authority. I got a white lab coat and the stethoscope around my neck, and you got to do what the hell I tell you. You know, that is what we're up against, is that they're taking advantage of our goodness, our good nature.
That's right.
But what
That's
happens...
That's what pisses me off
yeah,
the most.
Yeah, no, and I tell you what happens throughout history, and what we're counting on and what we're emphasizing, is that when people start to get critical thinking, they start to examine what's going on, and they come to that sound resolution that they're up against evil with the data that you are getting. That feeds into our convincing ourselves, all right, you want us to get the eye of the tiger? Because I love my family, myself, my community, even my country, you know, or philosophy or way of standard of living, or I just want to, you know, play with my grandkids and not have to worry about. Because of that, good people stand up and do some ass whipping. And that is what they are afraid of. They're afraid of an awakening. So they'll call it, well, you're not woke enough. Well, there's a big difference between woke and awoke, you know, awake. So I'm just going, all right, you guys want to play? You want worldwide government? I give you worldwide revolution. So this is what you're up against. You're up against the ramifications and the effect and the result of this no empathy, no compassion. You're going to crowd everybody into a herd so you can glean whatever from them. And this is the effect of that. Because their goal is, I'm all for profit. You know, make as much money as you can as long as you don't violate my individual rights with force and fraud. Boom. Simple. Well, they go, damn it. Well, then we can't do it the way we want to get as much as we want, what we want. And, you know, I need, you know, more, you know, hookers. You know, I need more money. I need more mansions. I need more, whatever the hell it is, because they don't care. So once we realize that, then we can start having solutions. Well, that happens over time. You know, it's Christianity, or it'd be the U.S., you know, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence. So that's what you're up against. It's philosophy versus philosophy. The purpose of government in the Declaration of Independence says to defend individual rights. When it doesn't do that, it's time to alter or abolish. It's your right, your duty. Boom, I'm in. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence. It's all about individual rights. When you take that out, this is what happens. That's what we're up against.
Yeah, well, they're going to try, but I don't think they're going to succeed because, you know, whoever they are. When I say they,
they won't leave me alone.
Well, a lot of the theys are corporations, and corporations by definition are not human, so of course they don't have feelings.
They come down to people, and they're all sharing directorships with each other. They all buy in, they got the media, they got the government, they got the regulatory capture of the industry of whatever, they're all the same thing. And see, you want to know who they are, they're the ones not leaving you alone. It's no more complicated. The whole purpose of government was to be left alone. We're going to try and have a, you know, leave me aloneism here. You can do whatever you want as long as you're not violating somebody else's leave me alone. And that, oh, hell no, we're not leaving you alone. We got a clipboard, a shiny badge, and a gun. This has been great. New friend, Dr. Jessica Rose. Go check her out on YouTube, Jessica Rose. We'll be right back. Okay.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Today, the Unafeared Day, I think we're unafeared. Dave Ridley doing the, you know, BitcoinGandhi.net thing, walking across in support of freedom and against the Crypto 6, get read in FBI, you know, whatever. That was awesome. You know, so we're going to be keeping checking in him up until June 2nd when he actually goes up to the feds and does his Gandhi thing. Then we had just had Dr. Jessica Rose on. You go to YouTube and she got a channel, Jessica Rose, there on theirs. The Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, what she found out from doing that. And like, damn, that was an interesting conversation. And she's making friends. She's finding out that there's a movement. There's a thing out here. You know, and I tell you, the thing out here is definitely where our next guest is, you know, Stuart Rhodes, oathkeepers.org. Now, we've been talking to Stuart since like forever, you know, even before this and all the kind of stuff. So we know Stuart knows how it's played. You know, and a lot of people, they get out and go, oh, I'm for it, and they're dead. Or they're in jail. But they keep trying to come after Stuart Rhodes. He's doing it wrong. He's not complying, and he wants, like, military and law enforcement, you know, or supposed to be peace officers, to live by their oath. You took an oath, right? What was that oath say? What does it mean? Well, some of them are going, hey, man, I'm an oath keeper. I want to be, you know, I'm with you. Well, January 6th, they had a lot of people went to Washington, they went to Washington, whatever, you know, and they're coming. If you went to Washington, you must go to jail. You were in support of not us. We need to, unless you're Antifa, and then it's okay. But, you know, they are, they them those, man, the ones who won't leave us alone. And then they put up the fence, the wall, the you're not allowed to, the people can never, as if I care. You know, you want to go and be in support of something now, it's not go to Washington. And I was saying this before. Woo, let's go be in charge of the marble. Yay. You know, I don't care. We took over the Capitol building. I don't give a crap. What they're more afraid of is you ignoring them. And that's why they're doing this. That's what I think. They're trying to maintain their relevance. See, people want to take us over. No, we don't. What if I just don't care? What if I'm ignoring you? They hate that even more. So they go after Stuart Rhodes, oathkeepers.org. All right, Stuart, monologue me, man. Tell me everything that's going on and what's up, and have an understanding, buddy. Go.
Well, what this is they're trying to turn it into the American Reichstag fire. What happened with the Reichstag fires is when the Nazis first came into office, they still had the remnants of the old republic. And so they had to have an emergency. And so someone set fire to the legislature. Turns out it was probably the Nazis themselves.
Yeah.
But in the aftermath of that, they arrested. That's where the concentration camps began in Germany. Began to do mass arrests all over the country of all the communists. And then it was all the trade unionists and on down the line. So this is very much the trying to bootstrap really what was at most a riot in the middle of a protest is what it was. A few people got violent with the cops. There's some footage of that. None of our guys, but there were some that did. Some did break in. And then there were a bunch of people just walked through the doors because the doors were open. And on many, many occasions, it was cops saying, come on in. They walked right in.
Yep, all part
so they don't have a really... Not much of a violent insurrection there, right? Unarmed. It's not really an insurrection.
Right.
So, but they have to make it into something that's not. And so like Officer Sisnik, he died of a stroke days later. Nothing to do with what happened on January 6th. But you saw all the way from the beginning, all the way until just recently, they were declaring that he had been murdered by the Trump supporters, which was complete bullshit, complete nonsense. But they have to try to create this into something it wasn't. And that's what they're doing. And so their whole thing is to demonize not just Trump, but his followers, and not just his followers, anyone, including libertarians. Don't forget that Brennan, when he was talking about all the potential domestic violent extremists, listen to libertarians.
Woohoo! Looks like we made it! Yeah, we're like...
You made the list, man. You made the list.
I'm like, oh, God, you know? Whatever.
That's what's going on. But you're right. The biggest thing you can do, the best thing you can do is ignore them. And but that... Not that you ignore that they exist, but you don't let their edicts control your life. You live your free life independent of their edicts. But you got to understand, they're going to get to you eventually. You and I have had this conversation before. You can only go so far in the little scootermobile bus there before eventually they come for your microphone too. So I think everybody out there needs to understand that it's not that you can say, well, I'm not with those people, so I'm okay. Like, what was it, the pastor Niemeyer said in Germany? At first it came for the trade unionists, but I wasn't a trade unionist, so I said nothing and did nothing. Then they came for the communists, but I wasn't a communist. It's like that. You have to understand that the big picture is that we're in the beginning of an overt, we've been in a covert dictatorship or coup since Kennedy's assassination, at least, if not long before that, the founding of the Federal Reserve. We all know that.
Yeah. No,
but now you're starting to see it become much more overt. It's becoming more overt. So a good example is that when I first started Oath Keepers, Southern Poverty Law Center went through the defense, tried listed as a prohibited organization that active duty military could not belong to. Well, they failed. And they got pissed off and actually wrote about it on their website, how the Department of Defense is not listening to them and is still allowing soldiers to be members of Oath Keepers, because Oath Keepers stand for the Constitution. We're not racially orientated. We don't discriminate along racial lines. So there's nothing there for the DOD to look at that and go, okay, this is a prohibited group. The KKK, you can't belong to the KKK if you're active duty. But you can belong to Oath Keepers because they're not that orientation. So SPLC got pissed off about that.
Southern Poverty Law Center.
Now fast forward. Right. So fast forward to today. Well, now, since the new Secretary of Defense Austin came in under the Biden administration, it's been Katie bar the door. Everything's listed as prohibited. Oathkeeper tabs, three percenter tabs, anything referring to the American Revolution. I mean, they just go to do these presentations.
Some DOD. Who's that big black guy? I can't remember what position he has, but he's been up from the DOD or something. I don't know his name. But he comes out and he's like, we've got to expunge extremists from the military. And then you had this guy in Space Force. He just goes into Space Force. Some commander, he's going, no, he wrote a book. He's like, what the hell is this? Is Marxism. They're coming in. This is under the guise of we got to get rid of extremists. Extremists for what? Liberty? You know, what was that guy's name? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he was a fighter pilot, and he wrote a book about communism.
No, the guy that represented the government that was saying going after everybody. You got to be woke. Or, who?
Well, the ex-CIA director Brennan was the one who did the interview mentioning libertarians, but he's just a mouthpiece and a front for the cabal.
No, I'm talking about the military. I think it's DOD. I can't remember his name. And it doesn't matter. Say them those,
it's
man.
Secretary of Defense Austin. That's the new Secretary of Defense.
Is he black? He's a black guy?
Yeah, he's a big black general.
Yeah, okay. Right. So that and really? He's Secretary of Defense?
Yes, he is.
Secretary of Defense was saying this. They're purging the military ranks of extremists was the Secretary of Defense. See, I'm so proud that I don't know this because I don't care. Because I just don't care. It doesn't, one of them. I mean, but I it surprises me. I didn't know he was Secretary of Defense. I mean, I tell you how much I'm not paying attention.
And so critical race theory, that was the point of that book that pilot was writing or is written. Is it a critical race theory, which is a communist doctrine designed to split America apart on race
theory? All right, we're going into break. We're losing you over the music. But right back, Stuart Rhodes, oathkeepers.org. I'm just, as much as I can, just let him explain it to us. I just want to, ask some questions, kind of, stuff I need to know so I can be smarter and act like I know what I'm talking about. Now I know the Secretary of Defense. I did not know that.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation. A difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Okay. I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing the cabinet. It's like 25 here, and the pictures are coming up. And straight white guys, I don't know, there's probably a couple in there. this was a diverse, these are just, they're figureheads. They're just going to do whatever they're told to do to just do. I am, wow, this is surprising to me. You know, I didn't, I mean, of course I knew it was going to be identity politic kind of thing, but damn. And their goal is what? You know, this that's going on from the Secretary of Defense and going after extremists. We got to purge. We posted that, had that up. That got my attention. We're going to purge extremists from our ranks. And they want to classify Oath Keepers as extremists, but now they couldn't do it before. Well, Austin's now Secretary of Defense. Can he do it? Does he stroke pen declaration of Oath Keepers are bad and go arrest them? I mean, is that what's going on?
No, they're not going to arrest them. But what they're going to do is the guys can't display any patches, even on their like their gym bag or something, that have anything that's prohibited. And they've got, you know, group of centers and any militia references. Anything referring to the American Revolution will get you red flagged, yeah. Of course, Oath Keepers. But the guys in the ranks understand, and the vague terminology of extremist applies to pretty much anyone that they don't like. So it's like, look at, like, it's like political commissars. It's like being in Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia.
Right.
Where you got political officers now being infused. That's what it's like. And they're going to tell you what thoughts or what websites you shouldn't have, what websites you should not visit, and they're going to be, you know, telling the commanders to watch out for all of these things. But what they're really red flagging is conservatives, libertarians, constitutionalists, anyone who's not a woke radical leftist is going to be
in the military
or eventually purged. Yeah.
You know, this is like if you go watch the movie The Hunt for Red October with Sean Connery, you know, great movie, and you have a political agent from the party. This is the political, not a military guy. He's to make sure you're with the, you know, wokeness of whatever the hell. That's what they're doing because that's what they've done. They know how this needs. We got to control the military guy, make sure they're with the program kind of thing. Well, then that's the first guy they kill, you know, and then they defect. But the this is what's coming. You're right. This is awesome that we realize this.
And it's for the same reasons. They don't trust. I mean, they're doing FBI screening and vetting of the National Guard troops for the inauguration. And now they've announced a purge inside of DHS. So they don't trust and they fear their own troops because there's an ideological split and an ideological war that they are very, very conscious of. And so they're trying to solidify power. But in a way, it only displays their weakness because they've got, you know, millions of Americans that go into the service, military service, come from rural America. They don't come from big cities like New York City or
Rome.
And so they don't share the same worldview as the political elites in this country do, or the college professors and all the college graduates that go on to become a lot of these officers. The NCOs and the enlisted below them, a lot of them come from rural America or small town America, and they have not yet been brainwashed to be woke.
Oh, they're trying.
And so they want to brainwash them.
This is a county level thing. They're trying to make sure everybody gets screwed up.
Yeah, so it goes all the way down. So this is just another indicator of where we are. But we have an illegitimate regime. I agree with you. Biden's completely illegitimate. I know, you know, as a libertarian, you think every government's illegitimate. Right. But this is like extra illegitimate. This is illegitimate times 100. So they don't have any legitimacy. So what they're instead going to do is use fear and intimidation.
Yeah. You know, this is, you know, it's not like there's not ever going to be a government. I mean, it's like, you know, a family, you know, a tribe, but whatever. I mean, there's always going to be some kind of something, you know. But I just always ask, you know, in the last couple of years, I've been really focusing on the community. You know, how's that going to manifest itself? That's why the show is Declare Your Independence, because the Declaration of Independence, the purpose of government, defense of individual rights. It doesn't do that. It's time to alter or abolish. It's your right, your duty. Boom. Sign me up. I'm in. So when I ask, what do I have to do? What can't I do? What's your conflict resolution? Well, the purpose of any government was to defend my ability to be left alone. You know, and not interfere with somebody else's being left alone. I mean, you know, it's not complicated, but they want to make it complex. And we need to do this thing. And then the side effect of that causes this. So we got to have a department of that, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, boom, now we're where we're at. So once we get back to understanding, and the easiest thing is to imagine, you know, not the federal government, we'll go to the state, and then we, you know who to beat up there, you know. And then, you know, we'll go down to the county and the community and the family. And it's and it, property rights. I put my tent in front of City Hall, and that's cool. If I take the same tent and put it on my own land without a government permit, I'm going to jail. You know, I'm going, whoa, when the freak did that happen in this country? So this is, I'm so glad, and we've known each other for a long time. You know, we've actually, you know, broke bread and, you know, hung out. And I know where your mind is, and you're exactly what they fear, to have people that are going by their oath, going by what, you know, the promise was of this government, and they go, nah, we don't want people thinking wrong. You know, you're doing it wrong, Stuart. Now, you were in, this is, correct me where I'm wrong, fill in the blanks. You were in the military, you became an attorney, you worked in Congressman Ron Paul's office, you understood the Constitution, you get to this point to where the Levolution comes, you're part of that, and we need an Oath Keeper thing. So how far off am I in there?
No, you're right, because it's what, so I was a paratrooper in the Army, and then after the Army, I worked for Ron Paul after college, and I was part of both his campaigns, 2008 and the 2012. So, but I realized that the same mission that Ron Paul had, which is a message of liberty, I wanted to take that to the guys with the guns and focus that mission on the military and police and firefighter EMS, you know, the guys that are given the orders. That was the whole point of Oath Keepers. Same mission, though, still to this day, is to try to get the guys who are given the orders, whether it's COVID-19 lockdown orders or gun confiscation orders or whatever,
yeah,
to start thinking about their orders and whether or not they're constitutional. If they're not, they have a duty to say no, to refuse them. So we're still on that same mission, but we've also been protecting people against Antifa across the country in the street because they get violent and try to shut down free speech. So we were in Berkeley twice and, you know, all across the country at thousands of events. And that's what the radical left hates. They hate two things about us. One, I started during the Obama administration and dared to tell guys that if Obama says something unconstitutional, don't follow it. That made me a demon from the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they tried to say that I didn't like Obama because he was black. It had nothing to do with his color. It had to do with his politics. So they don't like us for that reason, but they also don't like us for the last 4 years during the Trump administration. We were in the streets protecting Trump supporters from Antifa. They don't like that either. So they don't like anyone getting in the way of their street agenda, their street theatrics. You know, they're out in the street. They want max chaos. And then they want to be blaming on the cops and the school police, which is part of the agenda to take over the country.
No, they want some enforcement of guns doing what they want. I can guarantee that. You know, they just don't want that. They want to get rid of the, you know, and are there good cops out there? Of course there are. You know, but do they get supported? Hell no. You know, that's not part of their agenda. More.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Stuart Rhodes, oathkeepers.org, in the headlines. You know, we, they see they're going after, the leader this or somebody, Oath Keeper that. They got to say basically what they're doing in the press is Oath Keeper's bad and, you know, government good, and we're going to get Oath Keepers because they don't like our government and whatever. So is that rubbed off on you? They want to explain it to you. You said that, you know, the law enforcement had your phone or something. What's up with this?
Yeah. The FBI did a search warrant for my phone, took my phone, and, of course, scoured through it, through every conversation I've ever had. So and then there's
well, that's just theater. What, they didn't already have it? I mean, they can't get it through a phone anyway.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So what they do is what they call reverse engineering, right? So they'll go out and just gather your information illegitimately, then go get a search warrant, and then pretend like they discovered it for the first time after they've gotten that search warrant.
Right.
So, but they go back and they just pick up the pieces where they left off.
They want to legalize the illegal activity that they did. They already know. They just wanted to have your phone to say, this is what, and this guy, and it's going to be part of a prosecution of some guy, and he contact and direct message with you of something, you know?
Yeah.
So are you under any threat? Do you care? I mean, are they going to make an example out of Stuart anyway?
Well, they're trying, so we'll see what happens. But it's interesting that
I want a trial.
We went through the entire... What?
I want a trial. I want discovery. I want to just bring it. Let's do it. Helen, you're an attorney. Are you kidding me? Yeah, whatever. All right. I'm sorry.
Hey, look, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm not going to let them shut me up. And if they indict me, then like you said, we'll go to trial. We'll get discovery. So because I want to know on the other side, I want to see all the footage, all the security footage inside the Capitol that they're not showing us. They only show you the stuff that looks bad for Trump supporters.
Right.
They don't show you the stuff that looks good.
Yeah, the Antifa guy that put on a Trump hat and went and did whatever. I mean, which we know. You know, you got video. We can see this stuff. But they're being very selective. And any trial that's going to be put on, I would imagine defense would have a lot. And a lot of it they have. It's not like they don't have enough surveillance cameras. And so this is...
Well, they're turning it over, though. They're refusing to turn over the footage to the defense in a lot of these cases. And so the defense attorney is going to have to fight for it. They have a right to it. It's exculpatory evidence or potentially exculpatory evidence.
Now, like exculpatory means that it shows your innocence or something, right?
Right. So, the government has, the prosecutor has the duty. Of course, a lot of them don't obey this duty. But they have a duty to turn over to the defense any potentially exculpatory evidence in their possession. But they're fighting that. They're not turning over the footage from inside the Capitol. Only what they want to release.
Yeah. No, this is one thing I've been saying for years. The future is all about credibility. It's who you believe. You know, and they are just they, them, those, man. It is so amazing how erosive their credibility has been actively done by them. You know, I mean, they'll lie even when it's not in their best interest because they're so used to lying. When the truth would serve them better, they just lie. And you're going, wow, you're just, there's something wrong with you. And there is. And they're concentrated in Washington. They're sociopaths. I didn't used to say, I didn't know what the hell that meant before. They have no empathy, no love, no compassion. No, and this is the result of that. And and now they're all, they whip each other's up. They get each other confidence building of we're going to be in charge and kick ass. And then they come up against Stuart Rhodes and Oath Keepers and people that, you know, with badges that really freaking care. And they're going, yeah, but we're going to scare you into submission. And then when you have people of faith or people of principle, they don't scare easily. And they scare, you know, they once you get them, you know, the light on them and so on, they're ready to turn somebody in because they don't care. There's no principle. So they don't understand. They're the architect in the matrix. They don't get it. They can't understand. And what they're up against is what? And what do you think how this is going to play out?
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, it's interesting. Like, I've been good buddies with Jordan Page and another, you know, I call him anarcho-capitalist. You're one of those, too. But I always thought the best argument that anarcho-capitalist could make about failure of government is that it draws sociopaths. Not that power corrupts. It certainly does. But it draws people that already have nothing but a lust for power. That's exactly the biggest problem. That's who's drawn. Like, they've done surveys where, you know, your sociopaths gravitate towards law and government. Neurosurgeons, you know, make good neurosurgeons because they don't care about the patient, right? They're like a robot. And then any position of power, that's where sociopaths are drawn. But a big one is government. Absolutely right. So that's to me, it's always been the obvious flaw of government systems is that it draws people that want that power. And once they get it, all they want is more and more and more. And what they don't want is anyone questioning their power or their legitimacy. And so the best thing you can do is laugh at them and mock them and show them that they don't have any power over you. It will drive them crazy.
You know, that's what this, you know, I know that the impact of sign making that we put up everywhere, that's what the whole Love Bus is about. And the big focus is the resistance to mandatory vaccinations, because we knew this was a common thing. Even before all this COVID stuff, we were planning on this, had the bus ready, and we were been out since May. And going to rural America, it's like you say, these guys get it. They're not compliant. Oh, yeah, the health guy will come in and make them put their little plexiglass glass thing by the register of whatever the hell, and none of the customers, you go in these rural general stores or around, I don't care. You know, some of them, they're really scared in the beginning. They're kind of, okay, we'll give you a couple of weeks. Oh, that couple of week thing where you got extended, you know. So they're going, oh, okay, I get it. And they counted on their empathy. They counted on them wanting to do the right thing. They counted on them, you know, taking care of their neighbors and being a part of the solution. They counted on that. And that very trait is what's going to kick their ass. But they can't see it. They don't understand it. And we're just fostering, all right, man, you guys want to play? Let's play. So
that's an important point, is that they're relying on artificial intelligent analysis of what they think we're going to do. But that AI that they put together doesn't have empathy, doesn't have love, doesn't have courage, none of those human attributes that you can't predict. And so I think you're correct that they don't get it, they'll never get it, and neither will their artificial intelligent logarithms. They're not going to get it. They're not going to be able to map out our actual reactions in the future.
You know, it was if you rewatch the Matrix series and you pay attention not to the CGI and, you know, and the whiz-bangs and all the crap, but, you know, what was really going on. It's a mind thing. It was all in the mind. You know, so the Oracle's going, look, the architect, he can't understand it. You know, I was here to come and understand humanity, trying to get a beat on whatever, you know, and they can't. I get it. I'm for humanity, whatever. She's part of the program. Doesn't matter. The point was, is that I started to understand how to articulate how they can't understand the power of love and compassion and humanity's right, you know, because they play on that. They stroke that. They encourage it. They reward it on your Facebook post of fear of missing out, of gamifying everything, of whatever. And then sooner or later, you get enough coders and people that created these sites. They don't let their kids on social media. And they come out, the Social Dilemma, the documentary, you can watch it on Netflix or whatever. You watch that and you go, man, they are gaming us. And they have caused all kinds of problems. But when they create all these problems, and then who's the solution? Them. You know, they always got a big government solution, to the point that you get to what you're saying, all are narco-capitalist, voluntarist, leave me aloneist, or whatever, going the whole purpose that we are promised, you know, or the promises for us to have a government is not a chicken in every pot. It is for individual rights to be supported, and that's the first thing to go. And I'm going, whoa, once this, it's a cycle. I don't give a crap how many robots you got. I don't care how big your government is. I don't care how powerful and billionaires and secret handshake club of blood oath of whatever the hell you do. It doesn't matter. Humanity always, in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. When we come back, we're going to talk about the mess. Stuart Rhodes is going to help us. He's going to say, yep, this is what's coming. These are guys that kind of whatever. They want to, AI wants to plug in the back of Stuart's head. I guarantee it. They wouldn't learn damn thing. They wouldn't know what the hell he's looking at. We'll be right back. Stuart Rhodes, oathkeepers.org.
Hear you now.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
With Stuart Rhodes. Stuart Rhodes from oathkeepers.org. Yeah, we had a power outage went, and I tripped the breaker, turned there, get gab, but we got it in time to be back from the break. Oh, we win. Okay, this is when the man trying to do it this time. I'm kind of surprised that whenever I have, you know, like Stuart, maybe they want me to talk to Stuart Rhodes. They're going, no. Keep the signal all good. We want to hear Stuart, you know, them hang themselves or something. I mean, whatever. You know, so where do you see this going? I'm not for... You know, I mean, what do I do? I'm going to resist what? I mean, I just want to be left alone. And if it gets down to they're going to, you know, I'm just a passive resistance guy. Yeah, whatever. I want discovery and it's all on videotape. So how do you think this is going to play out? Sooner or later, they're going to have to be defied, resisted, and they're not going to like it. And sure as hell, people like you, you know, encouraging others or just being an example. So where do you think this is going?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a collision course between the American refuseniks, that's what we all need to be, and these people that are obsessed with power. And so, but the best strategy, it's the same path the founding fathers walked. They were dealing with what they considered an illegitimate government that did not represent them, and they had domestic puppets of foreign powers, that was the king and parliament, controlled the colonies through their royal governors, or tried to. And so they wound up using nullification and interposition against the royal governors, and then against the crown itself. And they had their version of the day was the East India Company, right? That was their Amazon and Facebook and Walmart of the day.
Right.
That was the favored big, huge. No, it's a good analogy.
No, that's amazing. And, that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah. And so, and you know, most favored corporate status, right? So they're essential. Every huge box store all over the country was still open and sucking up all the money from the locals while mom and pop businesses were driven out of business. That was the whole point. Massive wealth redistribution from mom and pop America to corporate America. And all of these big corporations, that's why they're all woke. You know, that's why they all jumped on board with Black Lives Matter and gave them billions of dollars, because they've chosen their team. And their team is whatever this future is, controlled by these oligarchs. Corporate America is all about it. This is kind of the problem I have with a lot of libertarians. They're so in love with the free market, you know, and Ayn Rand and all that, that they're turning a blind eye to the fact that these private corporations really are like the East India Company. They are it's like the analogy of two dogs in the street, you know, linked together, coupled together. That's big business and big government. It's an obscene industry, and there it is in your face right now.
Now, libertarians are not obtuse to the fact that, you know, they're – well, even in our PiratesWithoutBorders.com, you'll see in a lot of the letters of Captain Mark – well, I don't count them as libertarian oftentimes. But you have the letters of Captain Mark, and we talk about the crown, which is government and force and whatever, and the privateers. You know, the privateers were not the pirates. The pirates are free market out and doing whatever. A lot of times they had their own justice because, and matter of fact, they were very democratic. They elected their captains. You know, what happens when you're a butthead on a pirate ship? They kill you. I mean, you know, what'd you think was going to happen? So the privateers were more like what they would want to perceive as the pirates. They were the ones that were agents of the crown. As long as you had a letter of mark, okay,
yeah,
from the crown, you can go rape and pillage all you want in the name of the charter. So I'm just going, this is the privateers. So I call them privateers. These corporations and everything, that's not, they're not there to serve me. They're violating individual rights. The government's supposed to be able to protect me from that, from this monopolizing thing, from this, you know, private enforcement of from I have to and I can't and you got us and all that. You know, no. I understand your point. But I think it's misplaced. They go with the libertarians that, well, you're just against all, you know, or you're just for private, bid private. Yeah, as long as they're not violating my rights. I mean, what the hell you think government's supposed to be for? So screw you, I'll do it myself. But that is what we're getting to. In the future, there is going to be, how are we going to community come together, live in the contract, the HOA of whatever? I mean, what are you, I'm looking for that.
The same thing the Founding Fathers did. I mean, follow their playbook. They dealt with the same problems. Human nature does not change.
Nope.
But we're dealing with an updated version of the East India Company, an updated version of the Crown. I mean, in their day, they had the writs of assistance, right? Warrantless searches for the customs agents to enforce the king's edicts, to enforce the Stamp Act, and come into any home and search any place you wanted to. You had no privacy. That's why they got pissed off about that. Well, we're dealing with an updated version of that where our phones, these are our own tracking devices. This is your own ankle bracelet, right? Like Edward Snowden's been pointing out for years. They're using these and they use those private companies to make it easy for you, to make it easy for them to know everything you're doing.
But for convenience. We got to give up some convenience. You know, there would
so
be
you
convenience.
You need to walk away from these. You need to walk away from these things.
Yeah, no, that's I mean, there's we have, you know, they call it Clear Phone. You know, Clear United, we're kind of, you know, working on that. We have IPFS, Interplanetary File System, that we're doing where they can't censor or take off data. We're doing. We're all over it. And I'm here at the Greater Reset in Austin, Texas, south of Austin in the Buda. Yeah, Buda. And Texas, where they're doing the Greater Reset for the second time, you know, and I'll be speaking on, you know, the community thing. And I'm just like...
Are you there now?
Yeah, I'm in...
That's where you are now?
Yeah, I'm. Well, I hadn't started till Sunday. We're doing some sign stuff and everything. The buses. Yeah, we just pulled in last night.
I'll come see you because I'm up in the Dallas area right now.
Really? Well, get your funky butt down here and in the studio, man. I'll show you what's
Sounds
up.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, how long are you in Texas?
Yeah. Hey, I live in Texas now.
Really?
I've been here for a year. Yeah.
What are you digging it?
What's that?
Are you liking it? Is it okay?
Yeah, I mean, it's an important state. That's why I've been here for the last couple of years doing a lot of work, because it's a critical state. And it's got a lot of good history. I think Texas' own independence-minded history is good.
Yeah, no, the Republic of Texas, the Lone Star State. That there's a reason they say that. I went to college here for a little bit. Just took some classes at a community one time when I had nothing else to do when I was young, and I was here. I lived in Arlington. So, but to even take a class at a community college, you have to take what is requirement in high school to even take college classes here. So you had to take this class called Texas Government and History or whatever. Woo! They want to indoctrinate you. They go, let me tell you what's up with Texas. And the U.S. can suck it. And they have, you know, all those things are separate. They're like their own country. Their utilities are kind of isolated. Their road system is different. They're, you know, everything's different about Texas. And it's not because they're any greater, wonderful, there's another government. But they definitely, you know, we're our own government. We are not subservient to, you know, Washington, D.C. So this has been...
They have their own independent legacy or history of rebellion against tyranny, against Santa Anna. So it wasn't just whites who were rebelling against Santa Anna. They were what they call the Tejanos. They were the Mexicans who were Mexican citizens who rebelled against Santa Anna as well. And along with Hispanics and whites broke away from Mexico. So they were their own independent country before they even entered the Union. So it's a good history. It's an interesting history.
Yeah, but you know, the U.S. government, they go, yeah, but that doesn't count anymore. We had a precedent called Grant versus Lee, and you're not allowed to leave. You know, it's just a mindset. You know, it's just, yeah.
It's a battle of mindsets. Exactly right. So, but I think Texas is a critical state. That's why I'm here. I think it's important. It really is.
Well, what's
going to happen is you're going to see. Pardon?
What's your support here? I mean, you know, they go, ooh, they love them some Stuart Rhodes. He's our kind of guy.
Well, a lot of our leadership was already here. A lot of our board of directors, members, and leadership was here already. Yeah,
I remember the Texas Ranger kind of thing. You know, they had a group that we've been following Texas for a long time. You know, and Badnarik, you know, is from here, we had, you know, a lot of Texas. My parents lived in Decatur, northwest of Fort Worth, for a long time. My sister was here. You know, we have a lot of Texas roots and stuff. We've been to Texas quite a bit, done some activism, and. This is going to be interesting. We're traveling the country, and I'm telling you, man, you get out of the city, and even in the city, all this is just media, you know, bought and paid for BS. America is not like this.
What you see on TV is not real. So that's something I was at a retreat once, and the instructor said that. He said, and we're stuck with me. He said, hey, what you see on television is not real. And he was talking about the artificial divide and conquer of everything is not real. In the streets, in real life, most people don't care about politics. I noticed that. We did like 12 disaster relief hurricanes.
Yeah, we're going over the music. Everybody's mad. They can't hear you. But you know, I tell you, you know, hold on a second, Stuart. We can yak it a little bit. You know, Stuart Rhodes, we're close enough that, you know, it's like get your ass down here and come say, yo, what's up? And or maybe on our way out, we'll come by. But I won't do that. We can do that at least. You know, we'll leave the Great Reset into next weekend because there's a bunch of guys want to do a bunch of sign stuff. We're going to show them what's up. You know, I said, you guys don't remember the Revolution Radio Stuart does. You know, I want, man, we need to get some old-fashioned yak. Yeah,